Welcome to the Authentic Content Podcast with me, Rasmus Basile. And today we're interviewing Tanya Törnros. We did a live show, it was really fun, but there was a problem with it. When we were recording, I for some reason moved around my microphone and it messed up the sound partly. So we've been editing like crazy to try to make it sound right. So if you at some point don't hear me really well, I'm leaning forward and the microphone is hitting my chest. And that's the reason. And then it's, note to self, don't record with a wireless microphone, with a t-shirt, with that type of configuration. And if you can have a continuous check if the voice sounds good all the time. Anyway, so that's why it might sound weird at some points. And so you see the video, you'll see. But anyway, that was a short notice from me. All right. Enjoy.
If you create content that speaks to your target audience, that is good content. Most of my LinkedIn posts, at least, they're actually voice recordings.
Yeah, you told me. Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah. Tell me, can you tell us this process? Because this is a content, authentic content method. So we want to see, how do you do that? Tell me.
Yes. In my head, I think about telling this idea to a friend. So I try to keep it like a very natural tone of voice. Do you see YouTube as a social media platform?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
I don't.
Okay.
Do you know why?
Tell me.
It's a search engine.
All right, welcome to the Authentic Content Podcast with me, Rasmus Basile, and today we have Tanya Törnros with us. Welcome.
Hey.
Hey. So Tanya is a marketing specialist. What's your title these days?
Well, these days I call myself fractional CMO, or I say CMO as a service, which means it's basically it's a hybrid between a marketing consultant and an employed CMO. And I work with tech companies, B2B companies, and usually I act as their head of marketing, but on a part-time basis.
Yeah. And why you're here today is because you are always, like, you're into content. You do your own stuff. You do your own video, your own authentic content. And you do stuff for your clients as well. And that's why we're here. What is good content for you, in your opinion, B2B especially?
Well, the reason I actually got into marketing was because of content. Like, that was always the part that excited me the most. At the beginning, it was more like text-based content, you know, good old blogging days, and ranking and SEO. But then as the world evolved and the world of marketing and as I evolved, I got more also into audio and also into video. And when it comes to good content, I think the easiest way or the simplest way of saying it is that if you create content that speaks to your target audience, that is good content. And if your target audience are 15-year-old girls who are into Taylor Swift, then you make content for those 15-year-old girls on TikTok and whatever it is. Or if it's a 40-year-old woman in a high-tech company, then you make content that might be more appealing to her in solving her problems.
What is appealing? Like, I think, of course, people listening to this kind of, like, we know marketing somewhat because we're listening to this, because they learn from this podcast. But I was thinking, like, what is good content then? Let's say, okay, it's for a 14-year-old woman who works in some high-tech company. But what is good for what is good content?
Again, I would say we have to think about the target group. Like, for instance, if you want to have an how-to of doing something, is a 50-page ebook the best way on explaining how to do it? Or is, let's say, a one-minute video a better way on how to do it?
Or 10 one-minute videos. That could also be. But because I think that even better many times than the 20-minute video. There are cases for the 20-minute video, but the short ones are... People like to have the same thing, but chopped up in pieces somehow.
And the funny thing is, it used to be the other way around. Yeah. At the beginning of YouTube, like YouTube days, early days, you would have like 20-minute videos for a very simple thing. And these days, everything has to be short.
Yeah, I think they were punished if they were short. How the algorithm worked, they should be roughly 20 minutes. Because if they were shorter, somehow YouTube didn't like it. And if it was longer, it was the same.
Yeah. I remember I watched a video about, I think, opening my phone, you know, with this little sticky thing.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a video where it literally took like 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, and it can be like 10 seconds.
I had the same for the car key. It was done, like, 6 years ago. And they're going to show how to change the battery in my specific car key. And I'm like, get to the point. Like, just show me how I open it. And they're like talking and stuff. And I'm like, come on. Like, you just give me the how to open it.
Yeah.
Okay, but so short is good. Video is better than written, generally speaking, you'd say?
Well, because I'm a blogger still, and I love written like content, so I wouldn't say one is better than the other. I think you just have to have a mix and see what works. And also with good content, I mean, I think it's you who says it, like authentic content, content that, you know, I mean, where you show a little bit of yourself, not generic content, show some personality and all of that. And it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be personal. You know, you don't always have to talk about your life story or whatnot. Yeah. But it should feel like it's coming from a human who's trying to solve a problem for another human being or sharing something of value or something of interest.
So we have the audience here. So you had, for example, solving their problem. You used we can have a guide. But so that's one part of piece of content. Like we have your customer. They have a problem. I can show this is how you solve the problem for free. You just show that. But what about like showcasing your product? Should I showcase it or not? What do you think?
Yes. But it should not be always about your product. I think the ideal solution is that you, like this is something that I did at a very early stage. You know, I'm a content marketer by trade. So at the beginning, we did a lot of like blog articles and it was the golden age of content marketing where you could have a good, well-written blog article and you could rank 2 weeks later, like number one on Google. I miss those days. And what we did is we actually solved the problem for the customer. Like it was an article, hey, this is how you do your accounting. So this is how you do it with Excel, yada, yada, yada. And then at the end, or you can make your life easier and just use the product. So in that way, I like this type of content because in that way you give them two options. One is the option to do it for free and do it by themselves, or the other option is that if you want to get it done faster in a more prettier way, in a more easier way, you can use us. But of course, there is a time and place for showcasing your product. Like a very concrete example is when I work with a B2B company in industrial automation. And there it was really, really important to show the machines. It was, you know, manufacturing, all of that. It was important to show the machines to potential customers so they have an understanding of what their first of all, of what it would look like if they invest and why the investment is a certain price and all of that. And also, you know, in these cases, you also want to really know how the product works. There's no point in hiding your product. I think that, but there comes a point, if it's only about you, then customers get bored.
Because I was thinking the natural reaction is like, I want to show my product. Like, I feel like if people think what is marketing, one thing they will think is showing your product to people, which I guess you have to do, otherwise nobody's buying. But I think that what gets forgotten is the other parts where, for example, let's just help them solve the problem. And it's easier with, like, I love the word, like, this is how you do this, say some Excel magic. And a guy shows exactly how that's done. And I'm trying to copy to do the same. And then I'm like, I could just pay this guy to do this for me. Like I know he gets it. I get that he gets it. Like, okay, just please do it for me. And that could be like a service or a product. So I think that it's natural to think we want to showcase our product, but that's sometimes a problem too. Like they don't really showcase even how the product solves the problem properly. They show like, here's a machine. I'm like, okay, but what does the machine do? Well, it has these screws and bolts. I'm like, I got it, but like, what's the end result we're looking for?
No, but I mean, I think here in the Nordic countries, the showcasing your product or kind of like the showing off is not the biggest problem. Because I think, let's put it like here in Finland at least, and that showcasing your product and saying how great it is and all of that, it is not in the DNA of Finnish culture. I think we don't need to worry about that here. Maybe in other countries where it's too much about me.
I have to worry that they're not marketing them themselves at all.
Exactly.
But what do you have some, if you get like let's say you get a new client, like a fractional CMO client, say, you get in there, what are the things that you're looking for when like to analyze what's going good and bad in their marketing?
In the marketing in general, or with content?
Let's say the company already exists. Well, let's start with content. So we have you come in and you look at their content. What are you looking for? How would you make an analysis of what they're doing good and what they're doing bad?
Well, to be honest, every single gig I've ever had was at companies where they haven't had the content at all.
So not even Merry Christmas and Happy Easter?
No.
Those are my favorite ones. I had an interview with a company once a long time ago for a sales position. I was also discussing what they could do in their marketing because it would support the sales. And they literally had like Merry Christmas, Happy Birthday, Happy Easter and stuff. That's what their posts. And no video. And I was like, oh my. And I gave the examples to the CEO. And I think he was so blown away with the small ideas. Like, he didn't have big ideas, but just some ideas what could be done that, I don't know, he couldn't handle that.
Right.
Okay, sorry.
So usually there is no
have nothing, yeah.
But let's assume there is content. Mm. So the first thing I'm going to look at, or the first thing I would do, is actually start looking at the target group. In some cases, they have defined the target group, and it's okay. In some cases, they have defined the target group, but they want to have another target group because they realize this is not the target group we can serve or want to serve. And there's cases where there is no target group defined. Mm. So there it starts. So like looking at a target group, looking also at what the competition is doing in that field, just to get a feel of what's going on. Mm. And then we have the target group defined. And then I look at, okay, what is all the existing content we have? So really kind of like mapping out, okay, these are the videos, these are the recorded webinars, these are the written articles. Mm. And then I looked at, okay, what can we keep? What still makes sense? What do we need to update because it's outdated? Mm. And then there comes my favorite thing, is content repurposing.
Yeah.
Like I look at, okay, we already have this amazing white paper written 2 years ago. Let's update it and let's make 20 blog articles, videos.
Oh, I feel the same, yeah.
You can make like LinkedIn posts, endless LinkedIn posts out of it. Mm. You know, like trying to figure out what is already there, and then also seeing, okay, what do we need to create? Mm. What is just simply missing, and giving that.
Do you ever take anything away?
Yeah.
Because I've been thinking about that on my podcast. Like those of you listening, it's the first podcast I did. It's like, they're not that impressive, and they're not to the point. Like they don't have a clear angle, even. Or even if it had, I wanted to talk about sales in that case.
Yeah.
The person I was interviewing didn't go down that route, even though I'm trying to talk about it, and they're not replying with what I need to hear. Almost like a politician. And you know that is like, so what are your sales numbers say? And they will say like, well, you know, sales is an important thing, and I love green grass and the blue oceans. And like I'm like, what's the numbers? So maybe I should take them away. I've been thinking if I should, but I've been thinking to keep them just to show to other people that you can start out by not being that good.
Yes. And I think in your case, okay, if it's one thing, if it's hurting your company and hurting your brand.
Maybe.
Okay. Maybe you should take it away then.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, because it's part of your mission to educate companies on content, on marketing, it could be a really nice example. Like, hey, you can start out with nothing and you can still get some traction with it.
Mm.
So in your case, it could actually be quite nice to leave it as an example how you get started, and it might be sucky.
Yeah.
But this is your business. Mm. But for instance, a very, very shitty like article which is factually wrong
An old product we don't sell anymore.
Exactly. Like, no, you just take it away. You don't need that.
Yeah. I think, and I'm looking at, you know, I was thinking about the Apple website now for some reason, but like some of these like big companies, they just shave off stuff. Like it's just the thing they're selling. They don't have like all kinds of other old stuff. But if I look at most companies' website, they will have whatever they ever did.
Yeah.
It's there somewhere. You could find it usually if you like search through there. So yeah,
but it's frustrating. Like it happened to me that I was using a software, and then I looked up something in the help center, and then it's like I can't find it in the software. Oh yeah, we took that away. We took that feature away. Why do you still have this on your website,
dude? I get so frustrated.
So that's one of those cases where it's
the
like
weird thing
can
is,
hurt your brand.
How does this? I'm wondering. I don't know how this happens with big companies. Like there was this LinkedIn thing I wanted to do. I couldn't do it. I was searching. I said I can't do it. The article didn't help. And then there was like this little thing that if I send it to a certain person, it works. And if I send it to a certain other person, it doesn't work. Like it depended on what type of connection they were with me. And that didn't say in the article. So I was like, why can't I do this thing? And I was like, yes, because I figured it out after, you know, half an hour of
like
frustration.
Like it was technical, like,
I could send it to a second or third degree connection, but I couldn't send it to a first degree connection for some reason. That was something I wanted to do. And I was I couldn't change my signature in LinkedIn Sales Navigator. I wanted to change it, so I wanted to try it with somebody I knew, so I don't make a mistake with an unknown person, but they didn't allow that. So, that, you know, things like this. And it was like, why? I can't be the first person to have this problem.
Yeah.
And why? Yeah. Or at least the function wasn't taken away that time, but that's happened to me as well.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of old stuff. So you get rid of old stuff that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And then you, if there are top like a white paper, some proper topic, you can like, okay, let's use this that we're showcasing how good we are, or talking about a good problem, and just remake that into different things that we already have.
Yeah.
I think that's also a problem because so many people ask, what should I talk about? And but you can just talk about the stuff that you normally talk about with your customers. And if you have already written it, you can say that. You can even read.
You know how to talk, usually.
Yeah. Mm.
So it's like putting it in a video or just putting it in text form. Mm. It's like write the way you talk. This is something I always try to remember. And that's why I actually like most of my LinkedIn posts, at least, they're actually voice recordings.
Yeah, you told me. Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah. Tell me, can you tell us this process? Because this is the content, authentic content method. So we want to see, how do you do that? Tell me.
Yes. Okay. So usually I get my best ideas when I'm on the run. Like, I might be going for a walk, or I might do some cleaning in the house or whatever. And then I have an app on my phone, which is called Otter. Mm. And what Otter does is that it converts voice into text. Mm. So I have an idea, and in my head, I think about telling this idea to a friend. So I try to keep it like a very natural tone of voice. And so I speak into my phone, I push record, and I said, okay, here's a thought. How about that we start utilizing content in a more methodical way, whatever it is. Mm. And usually it's like 1 minute long, a maximum 2 minutes. I save it. Then I go to my laptop, I open the program on my browser, and then it is already transcribed for me. So I have the full text already there. The only thing I do afterwards is I take that text and then I copy paste it into ChatGPT and I ask it to check for grammar or language mistakes. Because sometimes, you know, on the fly, and especially, I mean, English is not my native language, so you can make mistakes, and then ChatGPT, it keeps my tone of voice, it keeps all the content, but it only like fixes grammatical errors.
Yeah.
And boom, ready to post.
Yeah. And then it's an authentic, it's you talking.
It's me talking. And it's not some, you know, ChatGPT generic kind of thing. And it saves me time.
Yeah.
Instead of me having to sit down and start to think, how shall I word this? No, I'm basically calling somebody.
Yeah. I'm calling myself. Hello.
I'm calling myself.
But I usually promote to people I work with, especially the interns that I have, to, like, if you have something, like, throw into ChatGPT, do something. But then I get something back sometimes, like they have prepared something for me. Now, I don't have that right now as much as I did in the fall. But anyway, I got something. I'm like, did you write this? Because it doesn't sound like me, and it doesn't sound like you.
Yeah.
It sounds a little plastic, and they use really big, it's like the most empowering, empathic, super extreme, like they use really strong words normally in ChatGPT.
The tone of voice is not always really personal.
It gets a little bit off. Yeah, I know you can get it with lots, the right type of what you call prompting, but anyway, so I know like that's, it just doesn't feel authentic at all. Like, I like that you use the voice to post, to use that, because I think we got it wrong also. One good thing with writing is it helps to clarify your thoughts, because you're somehow writing helps you. But on the other hand, that creates for almost everybody a blockage. They're like, I can't write. They just get stuck.
Yeah.
But if you do what you do, you just record, you have an idea, you record it.
Yeah. Then because you know how to talk.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. Well, so how about why you're not doing that as like this with like a selfie mode?
Oh, I started to do that.
Okay.
I've actually recently started to do that, recording videos. And it's a thing that I had to get more comfortable with time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was so used to into writing and blogging and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in the last 2 years, I really just, because of also a good friend of mine who I'm doing videos with, he really like told me that, hey, you can't just say it in video.
Yeah.
It's even better.
Yeah.
So I've started to do that now, and I've taken like the angst or kind of like the insecurities away from it.
Mm.
And now I love it. Video is one of my favorite formats now.
How did you go through that thing with people struggle with that, getting not being afraid and being in front of the camera?
So what helped me was that we actually scheduled a video shoot for 4 hours, and in those 4 hours we shoot 10 episodes, and then afterwards it was like, wow. Wow, we just shot 10 really good episodes with hardly any preparation, and with the whole setup. You know, the actual shoot was 2 hours, but you know, the whole setup and then taking it
like
down.
We did today, it took forever to do this.
So the whole thing, the whole shebang, it took four hours. And afterwards, it's like, oh, this is how it goes. This is not that difficult.
Yeah,
I love it. Yeah.
So the thing was to put you in that situation. Let's say it could have, like here, if somebody else sets it up and you just have to sit here and talk, and I think after a while you get used to that there's a camera.
Yeah.
Eventually, you can't be bothered by it for, eventually you're like, I can't, I don't care.
No. Maybe it's also intimidating if you don't set it up yourself. Maybe if you come at a finished set and there's lights and maybe there's a couple of people and everybody's looking at you, it can be a little bit like scary. But maybe if you're part of the setting up thing.
So you make it yourself.
Then it helps.
Is that called this voluntary, being confronted with a challenge voluntarily, or being forced upon you is very different.
Like
this, if you, you know, the one is traumatizing, if something really horrible happens and you didn't want it to happen to you. The other one is like, you know, let's say like you're diving in the ice water. If somebody throws you in, it's not fun. If you go into the ice water, it's still tough. but yep. it's like an empowering experience instead of a traumatizing experience.
Yeah, yeah, so good that's example, about, yeah. fitting example for
yeah.
today.
And setting up, yeah, that's a good one. So that's how you got through that fear of like talking in front of the camera.
Yeah, I wish it would also help with public speaking, but it doesn't quite work that way. Yeah. Video is so much easier than public speaking.
You can at least edit it or throw it away if you don't like it or something like that.
Or it's like you say something, it's like, okay, another take.
Like, oh yeah. You start poorly. You're like, just restart.
Maybe that's something that people should know as well. Mm. That, you know, with videos, usually you can take several takes.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
Yeah. Sometimes I have to take like 4 or 5 to get the good start.
Yeah.
And then like maybe the next video I get it right away. But it can be like repeat to like. But if you do the 1 minute, it takes 10 minutes to do 4 mistakes or 5
Thank
mistakes.
Thank you for saying that because I always thought I'm the only one.
No.
Like I always thought that shit. It's gonna take me like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
By the way, can I say curse words?
Yeah, I think so. There are no children listening to this. But explicit. Yeah, but yeah, it because if you have a bad hook, if you don't have a good start, people don't listen.
Yeah.
So you have to rip. But do you do it? So now you've started to do the ones with yourself only,
or
yeah. So that's also a little bit different because if you do it like this, it's easier to talk. Just
absolutely.
Talk. But when did you have any challenges like learning how to record yourself?
Like my challenges or
yeah, because first of all you were not comfortable in front of the camera, but then you did this long 4-hour shoot that got you more comfortable, but that was with 2 people.
Yeah.
So now you're alone talking into nothingness.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you had to go through something there.
The main one tip I have is don't use the selfie mode because you will end up looking at yourself.
Yeah, you look into your own eyes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it means that, you know, your eye gaze will be lower and you're not talking to the people.
Yeah.
So I always turn the camera around and then I look into the camera or like the lens, or what you call it, and I think that I am talking to a real person. Mm. Like a real person is watching this in real time or something like that. And that also helps me kind of like, again, trying to keep it more casual, still professional, and still getting the point across. Mm. So maybe not in the exact same way as I would be talking to a very good friend.
Mm. Yeah.
But still like keep it more like casual. And what was the other thing?
Yeah, look, flip the camera. Was that difficult, by the way, to flip the camera? I was waiting. People told me that for 4 years. I did it the first time in like September.
Why?
Yeah, because it was filmed like this. I can't see what I'm filming.
Okay. Like, thank God I can't see it.
And now they have like 4 freaking cameras on there. I don't even know which one to look at.
Yeah, true that.
Well, with that you can, I just look with the finger, which one is it?
The tricky thing for me is the adjustment of the camera, because I have to go back and forth, if you don't have somebody else with you.
Oh, yeah.
But once you've set it up, and maybe if you have a space where you can always leave it in a certain kind of way, then it's easier. Mm. What else did I learn? Usually, like I have like my main points written down, not an entire script, because then it becomes robotic. At least some people can do it, like reading from a prompter kind of situation.
Yeah.
I haven't mastered that yet. So usually I have maybe 1 or 2 key points I want to convey, and then I just like talk.
Yeah.
But it is a process. Like, I'm going to be honest, it is not the simplest thing in the world. This is much easier. This is fun.
Yeah.
But talking by yourself alone
Do you do several in a row or do you just do one? Like, how do you do the difference between recording and uploading?
So I just started this because I've had a lot of like this interview kind of situations. Mm. So I have a lot of video material. These kind of things I just started. But then I say, okay, I'm going to do 1 hour and then try to get as many videos done in that 1 hour.
Mm.
And then I always set aside, because I edit the stuff myself. I don't put too much time and effort into it. I keep it quite simple. And then I set aside like a couple of hours. Okay, now I'm just editing it and then I schedule it.
Yeah.
That's how I do it at the moment. I'm sure, like, you know, when there's more budgets and in companies, you can have better processes for it. But now just talking from my own perspective.
Yeah, I think that's a really good process. I would add editing help. Otherwise, I think it's quite good.
Yeah.
One of the problems with I've been going back and forth with batching, so-called, like we're making many things at the same time. And now I first leaned away, like I'm going back and forth, but I'm back to batching. Now, because if you set everything up, and especially if you do it somehow interview form, if you do it really well, you can get like 60 videos in a couple of hours. Like you said, 10 episodes of that thing you did
in 2 hours.
So if you that is much more efficient for somebody who's not like into content. We need to get the information out. Like this is a CEO or researcher or something. We need to get it out, but they are not gonna if you said you schedule a 1 hour here and there, that's not happening.
For them, no.
Even if the time is there, then it's not the thing, so the time will disappear. Or they're sitting there, they can't record, at least alone. They will not be able to do it. Even if you tell them, do it, they just get stuck.
How about you find a middle ground then?
Yeah.
That you have like a session once every 2 months, once every month,
yeah,
if that
could
is
be.
Even possible. Yeah. 2 hours or something like that in a company now.
I think that would be good. Yeah. That would be easy. And then you just have a director there who's ready. That would seem ideal, probably monthly or something like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did that also with one of the clients I work with. It wasn't video, but it was still content where we're like once a month we were asking the experts. And then we created like content pieces out of that. And with different kind of experts, keeping it, I think the consistency, consistency, as we know, is important.
In 1 month, I did one video a day on LinkedIn and all and Instagram, all everywhere. In 1 month, every person I met was telling me, "Oh, I've seen your videos."
Like nice.
It took a month. Who was it, Gary Vee or Alex Hormozi was saying like how much videos they do, and I was like, "Okay."
I have a question for you on that. Yeah. I recently had a. What was it? A workshop with a bunch of companies. I was talking about LinkedIn, and as I also said that there is no golden formula of how many times you need to post. Just find a cadence that works for you, and then keep it for a longer period. For some, it might be once a week. For some,
it might be
10 times a week.
Yeah.
But find your cadence, and then I gave the example that, for instance, me at the moment I post 3 times a week, and that works for me. And then I had this question from one participant where it was like that. But how do we know that what we post, like when is it too much to post? Like for instance, when I see somebody posting more than once a month, I already block them. I already get annoyed.
Is that the buying persona?
I said the exact same thing. Like, who is your target audience?
Yeah.
Like, but what would you say to that?
I don't know where the upper limit is. I haven't found it. What I have found, if myself, I do block or unfollow certain people. But I don't care about this at all, and you're telling about it all the time, and I don't care.
Yeah.
Then I'll take them away.
Yeah, then those are the right audience.
Yeah, correct. That's the reason. Or it's directly irritating, like something that I care. Like I don't want to see this because it's something disturbing to me.
Yeah.
Then I will take it away. But those are the only reasons. If it's like, let's say, if I have clips about the Jaguar F-Type's exhaust, how it sounds, I can listen to that once a day. Like, V8, love it. So that doesn't bother me at all. I can see a clip a day. I can see every time I open the phone. I could have it as my ringtone, probably. It wouldn't bother me at all. So if the content is right for your audience, it's fine.
Yeah.
And sometimes also, like they say, I have Gary Vee, and he does a lot of content, right? So I look. Gary Vee sometimes comes along, and that's the weird thing. Even with Gary Vee, he's too much sometimes. Those who don't know him, he was like the OG. He started this 7 years ago or something. I thought he was crazy. He might be. But he'd said like, yo, do content. He had a guy following him. He was doing like all the time.
24/7, almost like the Kardashians.
Yeah, and now that's like normal. You could do that. But when he did it in like the year 2011 or I don't know what it was, then I was like, what are you doing, Gary? You're crazy.
I do Gary Vee binge watching.
Yeah.
I have these phases where I'm really into him and because I feel like I need it at the moment.
Yeah.
And then I feel like, okay, now I've had enough. And then I unfollow him for a while.
Yeah.
And then then I come back.
He'll tell you in every episode, you should do more content. Like, that's basically what he's saying. Mm. He'll say, like, you got to put out more content. If you're not putting out more content right now, this and that, he'll, like, insult people.
Yeah.
He has practically one message, is to put out content.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
That's great.
And I actually had to find a counterbalance to that. I actually,
cat
like...
Cat videos or something.
No, I mean, like, to his message.
Yeah.
Like I've been following Marie Folio. Are you familiar with her?
No.
She's great. Anyway, I've been following her for years and years and years, and she's all about content and especially email marketing.
Mm-hmm.
But she also says that, don't feel burdened by tricking the algorithm feeling like you have to post 3 times a day. You have to find what works for you. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like what I'm trying to do now, that I am not the person. I don't want to be followed with a camera all day long, and I don't want to post twice a day. At the moment, I post 3 times a day, and I've had phases...
Three times a day or
sorry, 3 times a week. I try to keep a consistency over a longer period of time.
I have a problem with the posting scheduling. Because I get these ideas I want to say, but then I schedule the post that day.
Say it anyway.
But then it's double posting.
Either you just schedule the new post for later, or you actually just cancel the current one.
Yeah.
And reschedule.
Yeah, that could be.
I schedule posts in advance, and actually I realized with that is that when I happen to be on LinkedIn, if a post is scheduled during the time period, the reach is 3 or 4 times more than if I just schedule it and I have not been online that day, because I'm not on LinkedIn every day.
Yeah.
I don't spend a lot of time on LinkedIn, to be honest.
I'm addicted to LinkedIn.
It makes me, too much LinkedIn, it just makes me feel bad, to be honest. Mm. So I prefer to put positivity and good things out there.
Sometimes we're like, how much are you on LinkedIn? Like, I try to limit it. How much on Instagram? Like, not too much. Like, we are there, but we know that it has addictive tendencies. And so, like you said, like, I don't, like, after too long on LinkedIn, I feel bad about myself.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a good environment for too long.
It's not because the LinkedIn, the content is bad or I don't want to hear about the people who are writing.
Yeah.
It's more that I feel like, oh, I should be doing this. Oh, this is such a good idea. And, oh, why am I not doing that? I get overwhelmed by it. Yeah. And I actually, like, learned this. That one of my mantras is create before you consume. Mm. And I've learned this, that there's people who don't want to create. There's people who rather want to consume.
98%, yeah.
Yeah, and I want to create. Mm. And I actually, at the moment, you know how much time I spend on LinkedIn per week at the moment? A maximum 40 minutes.
Wow, that's almost like a record.
A maximum. Yeah. Because I like to check in and see what's going on, like 15 minutes or something. 2 or 3 times a week.
Wow.
And that's it. And
maybe usually I can change my life.
And this is good for me. This works for me quite simply.
No, but I think that there's a point too, because also after a while, like, you're scrolling and stuff, it doesn't get you anything. But I think one thing I want to repeat that you said is that there is, if you want to play with the algorithm a little bit, I stopped releasing at 2 a.m. because not only I want to create, I want to be, like you said, I want to create before I consume. I don't know if I say that, but I want to create. I want to be part of that. But if I create and nobody sees it, I'm like, it's kind of stupid. So that's something that I've been thinking of how to incorporate, because I'm not doing it right now. I'm posting and I'm checking. And if somebody comments, I comment back. I do a little bit, but I'm mostly like in a reactive mode.
I mean, like, I learn a lot as well from LinkedIn, to be honest. And there's a lot of good content out there, so I really want to focus on what I'm reading and not just, like, scroll through and comment something funny. I really, like, I take it in, to be honest. But I can only take in a certain amount of text and content and video. Yeah. So that's why I have, like, this limit that, hey, okay, I'm now 50 minutes on LinkedIn and check out and see what's going on and interact.
Yeah. What do you think about other platforms? I'm thinking, go back to the B2B example, you get thrown in as the new CMO. What do you think about where should they publish their stuff?
Yeah, there was just like this company who asked me. They were into creating opportunities for female investors. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, obviously we're going to be on LinkedIn. And then we thought about Instagram, you know. Mm-hmm. And immediately I was like, if you're just starting out, Instagram is so difficult to get any traction if you really not have a dedicated person.
If it's not your
person.
Friends or something.
Yeah, or if you not have a dedicated person who is there creating content every day because the reach, it's so saturated. So I told them, I think now is a good time for you to move to TikTok. Because the audience might be younger still, but it's slowly changing.
Well, it's younger on average. You get a certain age group. Yeah. I mean, TikTok is like 10 years old or something now.
Yeah.
So if they were 14, let's say they were 18 when they're 28 now. Like and every year just keeps climbing.
And then it was also with Instagram, then the older people are coming in. Mm. I mean, my mom is on Instagram.
Yeah, yeah.
She's never been on Facebook, but she's on Instagram.
Okay, well, yeah. She's not old enough to be on Facebook.
True.
Yeah, yeah. But so,
are you on Facebook?
Yeah, I have an account. But
I have an account, but I'm not there.
I use Messenger. In Sweden, Messenger is bigger than WhatsApp. So you use Facebook Messenger. Yeah, that's the preferred
one. Is it so?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where I use it. But yeah, so you would say pick one, or what would you suggest? Or just.
It depends on your capacities. It depends on your resources. I mean, if you can repurpose stuff, why not? Like what I'm doing right now is that when I create a video for LinkedIn, mostly it's for LinkedIn in my case, then I might also drop it on TikTok. I don't have a proper TikTok strategy or whatnot. Mm. I'm just like trying to put stuff there. also just in order, like, I can show it to people. Like, hey, check out my videos here. They're all, like, in this one platform. So if I would need to choose social
media. But do you
media,
have to? I'm wondering, what would you suggest? Would you, if there, yeah, tell me, sorry.
Yeah. So if I would have to choose a social media platform for a company, it would be TikTok. To be honest, I wouldn't bother with Instagram. Do you see YouTube as a social media platform?
Yeah, I do,
I don't.
Okay.
Do you know why?
Tell me.
It's a search engine.
Yeah?
YouTube is a different game. It's a search engine. It doesn't have the community aspect like social, social media has. So I see YouTube as a search engine, which means if we, in that context now, I would also put stuff on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Because when people search for it, then it pops up. Yeah. Actually, now when we talk about that, the same thing is happening with TikTok. A very good friend of mine, when she's looking for a restaurant, she does her search on TikTok.
Yeah,
she doesn't go to Google.
Oh, wow.
But YouTube is, you don't have to have massive followings to be found. If people are searching for what you're like offering, you can be found.
Well, I think that you're correct. That's what it's used for as well. For me, I have YouTube is my like preferred social media, or what if I define it as that. But anyway, you can kind of comment, but I'm not doing that much. I don't even like videos and stuff. I just mostly.
Oh, I always like.
Yeah.
And sometimes if it's really good, I comment on YouTube.
Yeah.
But like is, for me, it shows like, this was really, really good. I want to tell you that it was really,
I had this
really
other
good
person, I was complaining about the algorithm, and she was like, yeah, go in here. Click that. You see that heart button? Click that. I was like, why? Yeah, because now you're telling the algorithm what you like. I'm like,
yeah, of course.
No, but they still know because you watch the whole video.
I don't even know.
I don't even know if the like is actually affecting so much.
I don't know at the moment.
Yeah.
How it is, but time or how long you stay on the post or whatever.
Compared to say LinkedIn or Instagram, which is they are social platforms, or Facebook, you're supposed to talk with your friends and stuff. But on YouTube, you're more consuming.
Yeah.
I would say, and same with TikTok, you're more like consuming. You don't meet your friends on TikTok. It's just stuff you see there.
Yeah, YouTube, you don't meet your friends either.
Yeah. So similar.
Unless you're like in the really deep in the influencer world.
Yeah, exactly.
You see.
But I was thinking about people ask where to post. I'm just thinking like, why not all of them?
Oh.
Because if it's video, especially if it's short form video, you could just, they all accept it. It's like, why not? It's like a click of a button if you're like Metricool or something, like publish and...
One thing to consider, though, is that, I mean, this might be more of a one-person company problem, but also in companies where you have a small marketing team, is that once people start to engage, you need to engage back.
Yeah, it was kind of
then
weird.
You have to start managing it. And that is actually also the reason why I only post 3 times a week.
Mm.
I don't have the time to manage the interactions, the comments. And I want to reply to the people who post on my posts.
Yeah.
And I can't do that every day. You have to think about that.
That's a good point, Okay, is there anything else cool that you got, that you're thinking about, that what you would do? Do you have anything like, this is the thing that I think everybody should be doing right now?
I actually have a hunch that, are you familiar with Substack?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Substack is that you have content, it's mostly in written form, but you can also post videos, and then you might have free content, and then you might have it behind a paywall or something. And a lot of people are moving over to these kind of platforms because they're tired of social media. They're tired of the trolls. They're tired of like the whole world seeing their content, even though they don't mean to in some cases.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite authors, Elizabeth Gilbert, she has now recently joined it, and she had this really good thing. She said that, you know, nobody pays to troll you.
Oh yeah, that would be.
And I thought
that's next level trolling to pay for it.
Exactly, and not that I have had experience with trolling or
no,
like
but that's,
bullying
it can absolutely,
online.
Well, that's my first video. One of my first videos I did, I got people were hating immediately. Hating
really?
On TikTok.
Oh wow!
But it wasn't real podcast.
What I said.
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah,
before you interrupted me.
Oh sorry.
That's okay. We have now Substack. We're going kind of like back to the basics. That what blogs used to be. You had a blog. People were able to follow you through a newsletter or something, or even like subscribe to the blog, and then you would just send out your message to the people who wanted to hear from you, and nobody else, because there was no algorithm, there was no you might like this or something like that. And I also blog in my free time, like it's a pure hobby blog, and I love it. It feels like such a wonderful safe space. I have like 10,000 monthly readers. I have 3,000 people on my newsletter.
Not bad.
And I love it that every time I send my newsletter, I post something out that I know that is received with love, and I know there's no haters there. And maybe it's also because it's about spirituality and, you know, this kind of thing. So it tends to attract people. So I think that we might be going back to more of these direct conversations, email, blogging, like this direct connections versus social media and everybody sees everything. So that's kind of like one of the things that I'll be following and see how goes.
Well, Substack is as brand and that concept, how they're doing it, it's growing.
I'm actually also thinking now, I'm not going to use Substack. I might be using a German version of it. And I might, I'm also thinking about it now, offering subscriptions to my readers. Because I've been getting emails from people that say that, hey, do you have any offers? And it, like, because at this point, it has only been a hobby. But to give them the option that, hey, if you want to subscribe to the blog and you want to like contribute in some way or another, I have to think about the incentive, though, because I don't want to like bind myself to some things that I have to perform every month. Because, you know, I might be that after 2 years, I'm like, I don't know if you want to do this. So I'm just going to test it that, hey, this is for free, but if you want to support me in my work, you can opt in for, you know, a very cheap monthly package or something. So I'm going to test that.
There was some YouTuber I was very interested in for a while, and he had his own, not Salsa, but they had the Patreon, I think. And they had the tiers there. And one of the tiers is like, he will answer you. Because they're if you're really big, you don't have time to...
I'm not famous enough for that. I spend hours every week answering my readers, and they come with all. It's incredible with what kind of like questions or problems they come. It warms my heart to get that kind of trust, but it takes a lot of time.
The trolling thing, I realized after when you were saying that the issue we have with the algorithm is it usually goes on engagement. Some videos practically every human being have seen. That's how viral some videos get.
Have you had anything go viral?
Not personally, not yet. But I have with customers I work with. Like the 7 million one, for example.
That's a lot. Wow.
And still growing.
Nice. So I, quite honestly, I listen to a lot of podcasts, but none of them are business related. I listen to podcasts to relax. I listen to podcasts to learn things on a different level, not directly business or marketing, whatever related. Business podcast, are we talking about podcasts in general or business?
Like a B2B business is considering, should we have a podcast? Let's say like that. Or should I be on a podcast?
I mean, there's two different things. Because being on a podcast gives you like exposure to a new audience. I got my very first fractional CMO client through a podcast interview. From Australia. And I worked with them 2 years. And it was one interview, it was my first podcast interview, and it was like suddenly, bam. I mean, I don't know if it happens still these days because now podcasting is more...
It can absolutely happen. Okay. As long as somebody's listening. Do you know how many listened to that episode? To that where you were on?
I don't remember. I think you can see the stats.
In Uponor, which I've been studying now, they have one case where they got a sale of some hundreds of thousands. They never told me exactly, but some hundreds of thousands through a post. And I looked through the post, and the post I found, I think, has 11 likes. I know that one of these posts converted. And almost nobody saw it.
Then you get one person. You don't need to have 100 customers. I don't need 100 customers. That one customer, that was more than enough. And talking about the likes and stuff like that, I secretly wish we would not have likes and reactions. I think one of my best content, where I put a lot of effort, a lot of thought, sometimes it makes like, meh. And then sometimes often when I share personal things, you know, then they get a lot of like engagement, which is nice. I mean, I appreciate it. But sometimes I wish that, you know, at least for me, because, you know, I'm great before I consume. I just love to put content out there without having it kind of like, how should I say, validated, or that they're like, this is better because you have more likes and more reach. Exactly. And this is better because, like, no, sometimes this one works better, maybe because the stars were aligned. You never know. And sometimes this works better because it actually was good content.
It's so easy to think better is more views, because that's what we're seeing. That's the feedback we get. But we didn't know that this time the CEO of this Australian company was listening, and there were only 10 downloads, but it was one of them was somebody who really needed you. And that was worth how many thousands of euros for you?
So, and some like some influencers have actually opened up, the ones that got viral, and they said that, well, they might have gotten more followers and stuff like that, but it resulted into nothing in terms of business value. And then there comes like, I cannot pay my rent with followers. Yeah. It's a really good point.
Yeah.
What is your, okay, we live in a world where there's impressions and likes and engagement rates and whatever. What is your go-to, what's the word now, KPI?
KPI.
How do you define if a blog post was, in your eyes, successful? What's your favorite metric? That was the word I was looking for.
My favorite metric, would be that somebody's commenting, even privately, but say like, I just read that. That was like really good. I really like it. Really made me think.
Okay.
So that, or preferably like the inbound lead coming and say, hey, I read that blog post you did, or I saw that video and that got me thinking and I think I need this. I'd love to have a talk. That would be the favorite metric.
I used to say that too.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, changed. All right.
I changed it. Do you know why? Because I realized, because my target group are CEOs or management. And I realized that they are very shy to comment publicly their opinion.
Yeah.
And I realized in that way that sometimes people would then later on like come up to me and say, hey, I've been following you for half a year. I really like your content.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You have not even given me a like at any point. And I realized that about this, about my target group. You know, other target groups might be different. My target group is not very active on posting. And then suddenly I get an email. It's like, hey, do you want to talk? You know, I think you're sharing good stuff. So I dropped the engagement rate thing, at least for my business. But it depends on
the
businesses.
That thing, that's what I would measure. They actually reach out. That would be
okay. Yeah. But I'm looking at the moment, I'm looking actually at impressions. I don't care that much about the likes. I'm really looking like, because again, because people might read it and stop at it. And then the algorithm knows, okay, this is of value.
Yeah.
So, and I also like to make an impact because like we talked about earlier that I want to make sure that when I put something out there that people see it. And it's not like a vanity thing. I want people to know how great I am. It's more like that I think this is of value. So the more people who can see it, the better. And that's why at the moment I'm looking at impressions. But I might change my mind.
So I think impression maybe is, I was also going for engagement. But it might be, when you're saying it, it makes sense that the people who really like engaging in my posts are like unemployed. Like they have time.
Oh.
The impressions that you get, they might be at the moment one of the best measurements you can have.
Yeah.
That except somebody directly telling you that I want to talk business because of what you did.
Mm.
Because also impression, if it doesn't work, that's what you say. It's not about this self-validation or something.
Like you said, some posts, especially when I'm posting about life as a, you know, as somebody who moved to Finland and built a company, then it engages with certain people. And that's fine because that was the message I wanted to bring those people. Mm. But then when I have more like business related things that hopefully it's more like the my target group, like the CEOs and that kind of target group who wants to see it.
Yeah. You said you got your first paid gig from a podcast. So that was good. So what would you say, what is their strategy related to podcast be?
Ooh. I mean, to be honest, I have never like started a podcast. I've only been on podcasts. Mm. Well, I would approach it as part of your overall content strategy, obviously. Like you don't see it as a separate entity. If you have content where you feel like, hey, this would actually be great if we have two of our experts discussing it, then go for it. If you have the resources to stay consistent, and it doesn't even have to be for years. It can just be, okay, we're going to do this now for 3 months. And in those 3 months, we're going to have, let's say, even if it's just 15 episodes, you know, like try to set like realistic goals that works for you and your company. And then, if you have the content or the ideas and if you think it makes sense, maybe don't also like expect that people or your target group is going to go crazy over it. Don't do it because you think that this is going to be a full blown out success. You can almost see it as a way of what we talked about earlier, that gathering your thoughts, putting content out there and seeing maybe something that does work, something that doesn't work, or like training even in a way.
Yeah, so I've been thinking the same with the podcast. I like the format myself to listen to others. I wonder how many hours I consume. It depends on how much I'm driving. If I'm driving, it's a lot of podcasts. If I'm not driving, it's less. But I like the format, so I want to be a part of it. And I, you know, sometimes if you have 10 downloads or something, it could be like 10. But those 10 really care.
Yeah. I'm a huge Taylor Swift fan now. Okay. But I wasn't 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's because she slowly creeped into my consciousness and with constant. And then, of course, she had a genre change, which helped. But you know that now I'm a Swiftie. And it's because of consistent exposure to her.
Yeah. And you feel like you kind of know her. In a way,
Of course. And that's also the reason why we love binge-watching series, because they become almost like friends to us. Yeah. We want to know what's happening to our friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Is she going to die?
And they're not real people. They're actors.
And they're not real people. But this is like, I'm going to remember the 7-Eleven. 7-Eleven?
7-Eleven rule, yeah. And also, and also something I noticed with podcasts, now we're doing this with the video, but you don't necessarily, it's better, I would say, but you don't have to. You can do the blog posts that you do. You could like reflect on your own blog post for 30 minutes. Yeah. I want to talk with you guys about this concept. Let's go through it.
Yeah.
And I can do it in a calm, I'm not that calm, but I can do it as calm as I can. Could be like, I just want to tell this thing. It's really important for you guys to hear. Goodbye.
Yeah. What podcasts are you listening to? Like, be it like now business or work related?
Yeah, now, Confessions of a B2B Marketer. It's one, I like that one a lot,
Who does it?
Hey, the company's called Fame, I don't remember his name. And the thing is, I think this guy has a lisp. The dialect in England, I think it's an English dialect which has a lisp. But if the inside is really good, that's what people care about. Yeah. But yeah, I do, so that's the one I like. I think I listen to all of his. It's like once a week or something.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do this babbling podcast like Joe Rogan sometimes, like if he has an interesting guest. I'm more towards books now. Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. I love watching, listening to them. If I fly, I usually, because they're like 8 hours long.
Yeah.
So I take one of those episodes then about like Genghis Khan or something. They're amazing.
I also love audiobooks. Mm. Like I listen to podcasts. I listen more like to this. I think it's part of my work with my blog. I listen to the podcast where people are calling in with their problems. And then people are answering it. And they're like real life problems. Yeah. And the things I learn, and the things I learn about other people's problems is like, whoa, I don't have anything to complain. Yeah. Anyway.
Exactly.
I think it also makes me a better listener. And I've started to use it. In a way, it also affects, of course, business because it's about people at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But with the audiobooks, I love listening to autobiographies, especially when the author reads it.
Yeah, that's cool. They can even add stuff, you know, that like to make it.
I love it.
Yeah. If you go to a meeting and you spend 1 hour with the customer, it's just one-on-one. It's not scalable at all.
Mm.
If you go to a podcast, it could be only 100.
Yeah.
that's a good audience. Yeah. Like who wants to hear what you have to say. So you can also meet people through podcasts. I think it's kind of cool.
Maybe. I'm warming up to this idea now.
Yeah,
because I'm so fixed on video. I mean, the thing that I do at the moment with my friend, we're doing videos, but essentially they can also be podcasts.
Mm. Anything else you want to cover here today while we're in for the listeners or for me?
I think we covered a lot of things.
Yeah, we did.
I think it was fun.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, so what's your blog called? Because I didn't even know you had it.
No, it's been a secret. I've had it since 2017. Mm. But I actually had a 2 years break because I focused more on business.
Mm.
But now I feel like I need this in my life.
So if somebody's a true fan, find Tanya's.
Yeah, you can find my blog about spirituality and prayers and affirmations on www.infindung.com.
Best of luck finding that. And you find you on LinkedIn 3 days a week.
Yeah.
And you have TikTok. Is the CMO was here or what did you have?
No, it's my own name. It's TinFin. TinFin is the name of my company.
We'll have to put this, whoever's editing this, please, we have to put this in the show notes because we have to really check what this is.
Yes.
All right, Tanya, thank you very much for coming. Appreciate you coming.
Thanks, it was fun.
It was fun.